LegalizeFreedom.com. Why are we here? Where do we come from? Where are we going? From the nature of reality to the future of humanity. Beyond politics, poverty, and war. LegalizeFreedom.com.
Greetings and welcome once again to LegalizeFreedom.com. I'm your host Greg Moffat, and my guest today is Dr. Erik Karlstrom, who joins us to discuss geoengineering, weather manipulation, and various related topics. Man has been changing Earth's environment to suit his own needs for thousands of years. During the 20th century, however, the scope and scale of such changes expanded exponentially. Powerful and exotic technologies now exist, which allow almost unimaginable control over Earth, sea, and sky. But where did they come from? Who controls them, and to what end? And why are they shrouded in a veil of secrecy and denial? In a web that connects the Nazis, NASA, mind control, 9/11, chemtrails, and climate change, Dr. Karlstrom exposes a shadowy network of government, corporate, and military agencies pursuing a dark and dangerous agenda, which has the potential to threaten all life on Earth and the stability of the planet itself. Hello and welcome, Erik, and thank you so much for joining us once again on LegalizeFreedom.com.
Well, thank you, Greg. It's nice to be talking to you again and catch up. I think it's been a while since our last conversation, maybe close to a year.
So a little bit over a year, actually.
Okay. Yeah, so it'd be nice to continue our transatlantic conversation. I'm in Crestone, Colorado, and we're having a very normal winter here, which is cold. And it's quite severe. I've gone through a lot of firewood in the last... since about mid-November, so that's the short weather report from Crestone, Colorado.
Thank you. Well, for my part, we had in November there was forecast a lot of snow and ice, which I have to say has not yet arrived, but we'll see what happens. Today, Erik, we're going to talk about geoengineering and weather modification, getting into weather warfare. Now, geoengineering basically just changing the Earth by man-made artificial means. It could be the weather itself, obviously, atmosphere, other aspects in the environment. And weather modification has been going on for decades. A lot of people still think it's something out of the, esoteric, but that's been going on for a long time, as have other scientific experiments in that area. There's a military aspect to this, which may surprise some people, which is why I said weather weapons. And for a lot of people, the idea of harnessing forces of nature from man-made means, nefarious or otherwise, is purely out of the realms of science fiction. But these programs exist, even though they're, generally speaking, classified or even denied. And yet, despite that, there are over 250 international treaties regarding these areas. So, why do they exist? There must be a reason for that. So perhaps before we get into the detail of this, you could give listeners just an overview of these activities, whether it be government involved, corporations, or the military.
Yeah, well, let me just first say, Greg, that I have a PhD in physical geography, and I taught university geography for 30 years. I'm recently retired now. I taught climatology, I taught geomorphology, human ecology, which is basic, man-earth relationships, etc. And in 2011, before I'd retired, I was invited to join a panel discussion at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco, which is actually the oldest public policy forum in the United States, over 100 years old, and all kinds of bigwigs have spoken there. And the title of the panel was Man-Made Climate Change in the Skies. And so for that, I was still teaching then in California, and I put together a little PowerPoint, which people can look at on my www.naturalclimatechange.us website. Now, if they go to my website, naturalclimatechange.us, they can scroll down to the section on geoengineering, and then they can take a look at this PowerPoint. And on this PowerPoint, what I tried to do was give basically the history of geoengineering, the technological advances, the patents, the events. And as you say, most people are completely unaware of this. I was getting to the point where I thought, well, you know, I'm teaching Introduction to Physical Geography, and I'd say to my class, well, let's go outside and look at the sky. And, you know, if you look at the sky on, you know, many days, not all days, you will see artificial clouds. You will see what the Air Force called the persistent contrails. Some people call chemtrails. And remarkably enough, my students would sometimes be very shocked. I think in our modern world, people are so attached to their digital communication equipment and their lifestyle and their, you know, whatever, their cars and their jobs and their homes, and they really don't spend much time looking at the sky or thinking about it. And so I just like to preface it with that, saying that if people would like to go to the website and look at this PowerPoint and or download it, that's what we'll be kind of trying to talk over from today. And as for what you just stated, yes, in fact, the third page of my PowerPoint is entitled What's Happening in the Sky, and I list three things. Weather modification programs have been going on. Well, the Weather Modification Organization was founded in 1950. Okay, that's 63 years ago in the United States. So right now, many for-profit corporations and individuals, including Bill Gates and others, are involved in weather modification programs and have been over the last 7 to 8 decades. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, lists 68 projects in 17 in California. Most of these are in the western United States, and most of them are to increase precipitation, because out west, you know, we have a deficit often of precipitation. And so currently, weather modification programs are often done by corporations, and they're done in at least 50 countries. Now, the next kind is scientific experiments conducted by the government, also by corporations, and certainly the military, and again, individuals like Bill Gates, who's working with Dr. Ken Caldera in a cloud whitening experiment, which would reflect more incoming solar radiation back out to space, thereby, cooling the atmosphere. And then the third kind would be ongoing military operations, weather and environmental warfare. And in fact, there's been about a century of research that includes federally funded research. And this includes development of Star Wars in the United States and Strategic Defense Initiative. I would also suggest that it probably goes back to the militarization of space, going way back to the 60s when we were putting a man on the moon. There was an awful lot of money that was siphoned into other projects. NASA, of course, was involved. And most of these projects are classified by the military, and they're denied. And we have a situation in the world which I think is not particularly healthy, and that is that the military's technology, probably 50, 60 years ahead of what the public understands. And even though we have some 150 international treaties that prohibit weather warfare, the technologies are there, and it's probably happening. We can talk about examples of weather warfare, but I would suggest that environmental warfare, weather warfare, is going to be a major component of military activity in this century, because it's got great plausible deniability, You know, we didn't steer that hurricane. We didn't make that tornado. We didn't create that drought. We didn't create that flood. That was Ma Nature, you know. But anyway, environmental warfare is a huge topic that the government doesn't want to talk about, but they do in their documents. And then finally, I'll shut up and let you talk a little bit. These three different kinds of activities together would form what we call geoengineering, or engineering the atmosphere. And one more aspect of this would be called what they call terraforming, which to engineer the Earth's atmosphere and environment. And all of this officially is to, quote, mitigate anthropogenic global warming, which we talked about last time as being a red herring, a hoax, a fraud, a scam, a complete fairy tale, since it's been cooling since 1998 and we never warmed up much anyway.
Well, we'll come on to the weather warfare in detail later on, but you mentioned Bill Gates and the cloud whitening project, and there's lots of other things people can read about that they've been up to. I mean, seeding the atmosphere and also the oceans with iron and barium, and I even read lead somewhere. I mean, it sounds fairly horrific, but all of this, again, to affect the fundamental nature of the atmosphere and the oceans with regard to, you know, climate. The other plans they have, giant reflectors in orbit, literally to reflect sunlight, and even the GMOs are part of this geoengineering project. But the thing that struck me when I looked at this in the round was that if this grand scheme is designed to somehow eliminate what some people see as global warming or climate problems, or to prevent glaciations, to basically take control of the climate of the planet, some sort of silver bullet, it's got huge uncertainty with this, enormous risks, because the climate, especially of something like, you know, a planet, is an extremely complex system.
Amen. The whole study of chaos comes out of the field of meteorology, which, of course, deals with the weather. So anytime you have, you know, two nonlinear systems interacting, and the weather system has, you know, countless nonlinear systems interacting, anytime you have two or more, you have a situation which is chaotic and therefore not predictable. So we can't predict the weather for more than 10 days maximum, even though we have a lot of very smart people trying. And it's because of the nature of the weather. And I would submit that because our understanding of climate, which is just average weather, is not yet perfect at all, we still have many uncertainties and many, many things to be worked out in terms of the long-term patterns and what drives them, and just how and what the mechanisms are. So you really put your finger on a good issue, which is that, you know, if the governments of the world or whoever is in control of those governments decides they want to control the climate, and they make that decision on behalf of the rest of us who are not consulted, that is a very, very risky project. Again, because we don't completely understand the climate. We're a long way from completely understanding the climate. And yet all these climate models they've got, you know, for the United Nations and out of various universities, et cetera, that create computers that do millions of calculations per second. These are deterministic models, which means that they act as if they understand all the interactions of all the factors. Nothing could be farther from the truth. So I saw an interesting series of television shows. It was actually a BBC program. Maybe I mentioned this last time. The guy, I think his name is Burke, a science historian, concluded the last episode walking around a bunch of Cray computers. This is made in 1985, so quite old now. This particular last show would cut back and forth between Tibetan monks in monasteries and looking at the Cray computers. And the client and the historian who was moderating says, "And now in the age of supercomputers, Reality is what we say it is. And that is very true. We have a cabal that is not interested in scientific reality. They're not really referencing physical reality so much as they're referencing now their computer models. So what's the agenda? That's the question.
Well, I have to say, I think what was underlying my point that I made about, you know, the climate being a very complex system, and that if we unleash this cocktail of, not we, but if they unleash this cocktail of tinkering on it, that we don't know really how that could play out. And I think that's what was underlying that point, was this arrogance that, you know, a Karl Rove type statement of, you know, we shape reality. Well, maybe think you do, but it's like a lot of people have said, you know, the earth this and the earth that, and the idea that, you know, the earth could snuff us out in the blink of an eye, and it could also here for us potentially to live forevermore, you know. So, but the idea that we're in control, I think it was Terence McKenna said, well, you know, no one's in control, not us anyway, not the humans, not really.
Yeah, and the climate is one of the largest and most complex systems we know in the physical world, and, you know, to some extent still mysterious. Where are you speaking from, Greg, right at the moment?
Yorkshire.
Okay, well, you know, I'm sure you probably know that 20,000 years ago, your house would have been buried by ice. And I believe, isn't that the case? We had a glaciation that covered, had large ice caps that covered most of Britain and much of northern Europe, as well as all of Canada and some of the northern United States. And this was natural climate change. And we've had about 10 episodes like that in the last million years, perhaps 20 in the last 2 million years, and that these glaciations or glacial stages are separated by relatively warm, moderate climates, such as the present interglacial, and our civilization, agriculture, could not have really occurred in these much, much colder, more hostile glacial environments. You know, our modern agriculture system would be deeply affected if the world is triggered to go into an ice age. So then the next question is, the first reality, you know, check we need to do is that warming is good for people and plants and agricultural products and everything, actually, because the average temperature of the earth is well below what we are most comfortable in. You know, so it can go up a number of degrees and only benefit humans on average. But we also need to know that during cold periods, like the Little Ice Age in Europe and North America, about 1400, 1850, lifespans get shorter, growing seasons get shorter, etc. And it's much harder on creatures. And so, you know, the first big lie is that global warming is bad. Global warming is good. But global cooling could potentially be very destructive. And, of course, if you start spraying things into the atmosphere, like Bill Gates' cloud whitening project, or the chemtrails, the persisting contrails, and they create these artificial high cirrus clouds, some of them are going to reflect radiation back to space and have a cooling effect, which is what they say they want. Others are going to actually have a warming effect because they trap heat in the atmosphere. But you're right, we're just playing God, and that's very dangerous.
Well, I think this desire to control or attempt to control the climate, manipulate it. Now, and bearing in mind, we're not talking about weather warfare just yet. We're talking just about, you know, say manipulating temperatures up or down or changing local weather systems, stems from this idea that, as you say, whether you're subscribed to man-made global warming or not, I think underlies it is the idea that we've seen from history, as you point out, that periods of glaciation have caused enormous problems for human and other living, you know, animal populations. Periods of warming have had benefits, but they would also bring problems. I think what people want is to try and keep things in control as they are now. For example, sea levels have risen and fallen over the millennia, you know, over millions of years, and there were times when there was a lot more land available to us because the sea levels were lower. We can find civilizations, ancient civilizations, that were deluged, and they're gone. So that sea rise was bad for them. And if there was another ice age, some other species would thrive, we would struggle. So this natural to and fro, I think, you know, again, some people will say, oh, well, man is causing it. The bottom line for me is, whatever's causing it, sometimes it presents us with opportunities, sometimes it presents us with challenges, and some groups, you know, that the what we call the elites, would like to kind of keep things either as they are or the way that they want them.
Yeah, well, I've looked into this subject, and I do agree that the elites want mechanisms for control. And, of course, they control, you know, media, propaganda, and the NGO engineering thing looks like another radical effort to control the environment. Of course, the military is very interested in this, because if you can control the weather at a battlefield, you know, chances are you could control the outcome, and that goes way back. So in 1996, some Air Force officers wrote a report for their generals called Owning the Weather in 2025, or I think first it's called Weather as a Force Multiplier, Owning the Weather in 2025. It's often just referred to as 25 or 2025. And it outlines a whole series of steps that the Air Force should take to increase control of the global weather system. And, you know, again, the difference between weather and climate is average weather. So it remains to be seen whether they will be able to control the climate system, but certainly the weather system, in terms of moving the jet stream, moving the vapor rivers in the atmosphere, thereby creating drought and flood, steering storm tracks and steering hurricanes, creating and steering tornadoes, increasing the intensity of lightning, as you saw in that History Channel special you saw. There's just a whole, and of course, creating earthquakes through HARP, the High Active Frequency Auroral Research Program, in Alaska and elsewhere, these ionospheric heaters that are positioned all over the world that can bounce radio waves, extremely low frequency waves, up to the ionosphere, which is electrically charged, and then redirect those beams of energy anywhere they want. And of course, if they direct it to a fault line, that where there is, you know, a certain amount of stress that has been built up, then they can trigger an earthquake. And I believe that all of these things have been done, you know, certainly during our lifetime. We can talk about examples. But so this is what's so, you know, kind of dangerous and hypocritical to me about the rhetoric. I mean, it started with global warming, and then because it was obvious, people pointed out that it wasn't warming, then they changed the threat to climate change, and more recently, climate disruption. Well, guess what? They can create the disruption with all these military, basically spraying in the sky with all kinds of, you know, sulfur and metallic oxides, and also zapping electromagnetic frequencies of energy into the sky. So zapping and spraying would be the two main ways that, you know, militaries can harness and control the atmosphere, which is a very, very unstable, turbulent system. So little bits of energy can have big effects up there.
Well, I was just about to come on to HARP, but I think it's worth mentioning in passing, you mentioned that 2025 document, that although we've said that the public, and, you know, that included you and I up to a point in our lives, were largely ill-informed about all this, there's actually been a lot of government propaganda put out, even via the media, and a lot of stuff published by government and, you know, scientific arms of the government about this. I mean, I won't go into a list now, but it's on your website. There's reams and reams of this stuff with actually a lot of detail in it. So it's kind of hidden in plain sight, like a lot of these things are.
Yes, absolutely. And of course, you know, you get these public advocacy groups or individuals who take on a project, you know, like Rosalind Peterson in California. She's got two websites on this, and she's the one who invited me to this Commonwealth Club panel discussion. And, you know, one person who is, and she, of course, suffered health problems that just about killed her, and then she managed to kind of pull herself back together, and that's her job now. She just is 20, you know, not 24/7, but every day she's working on this, sharing emails with people. And so one individual can make a lot of difference to overcome the propaganda system.
Well, turning to weather weapons, just before we get to HAARP, it's worth saying that the history of weather weapons goes back to the Second World War. You can tell us a little bit about that, but there could be some potential benefits to these technologies in the sense of, you know, perhaps weakening hurricanes or diverting them, various things that might benefit mankind. Of course, it all gets a bit circular then, because if you can perhaps create or exacerbate hurricanes and someone else can weaken them or divert them, then it's, you know, chicken and egg, who's causing what. But back to the World War II experiments, there's quite a famous one which also cropped up in your work, but I heard about it again in that History Channel special, and it actually ended up killing a lot of civilians. One example in England, and that won't be the only one where, you know, an experiment has kind of gone awry.
Yeah, well, I think what you're talking about is the UK's Operation Cumulus, where the Royal Air Force in secret seeded clouds over Devon, England, and created massive flooding that killed 35 and did a lot of destruction in that area. But actually, if people are interested in looking at my PowerPoint, I identify the first kind of weather warfare as actually also being carried out by the Royal Air Force during World War II, in which they dumped chaff in the sky, and chaff is aluminum strips cut to 1/4 of the length of a radar's wavelength, and therefore the German radar were not able to detect the incoming planes, and they were able to just, bomb without getting shot at. Well, that was, I guess the ideal weapon, because the Germans in this case had no, notion that their radar was being disabled. But yeah, so going back to World War II, so many of these programs go back to World War II in many fields. But yeah, right after that, we saw lots of cloud seeding. In 1949, the year I was born, in New Mexico, there was a government military project, Cirrus, which of course is the name of a cloud, and they dumped silver iodide into the clouds over the New Mexico to seed those clouds, and the response was phenomenal. It was just phenomenal amounts of rain dumping all over half of New Mexico, which is a dry desert state. And then, as I say, in 1950, the Weather Modification Association was formed. In 1962 to 83, the U.S. scientists had Operation or Project Storm Fury with the military and were able to weaken hurricanes by seeding the clouds from aircraft, weaken them by 30%. And then in the Vietnam War, between 1966 and 1972, the U.S. military seeded clouds over the Ho Chi Minh Trail to wash out the supply routes for the North Vietnamese. This was called Operation Popeye. And interestingly enough, I live in the San Luis Valley of southern Colorado, and from what I understand, the experiments that were done in cloud seeding prior to Operation Popeye were done here, many of them, by a guy named Ben Livingston. And he claims to be the guy who initiated weather warfare. And there's still lots of geoengineering going on where I live. And I think we've had a drought for over 20 years. I think some of the global spraying and or military projects well could be involved. In other words, we're at a point now where it's very difficult to tell what's natural from what's created by humans. I mean, it's true that our technological abilities have really increased. So now it's hard to tell. But then if we move forward, we talk about global warming and the melting of the polar ice caps. Well, Unbeknownst to most in the world, the U.S. and the Soviet Union scientists jointly had a series of projects that were designed to melt the polar ice in the Northern Hemisphere. And in fact, that's where we have seen the melting. In Antarctica, for instance, over the last 40 years, it's been cooling and thickness of ice has increased, although it's also increased over Greenland quite a bit. But anyways, and then in 1975, the Soviet Union sent their woodpecker signal over to the United States, which was extremely low frequency waves at the frequency of 10 hertz, which is very close to the human brain wavelength that we were most responsive to, because that, in fact, is the dominant frequency given off by the Earth itself, called the Schumann wave. So some people, like Jerry Smith, who's written a book about HAARP, think that the main purpose of HAARP is to bathe the atmosphere in extremely low frequencies that are, well, frequencies similar to our brain is responsive to, and that this could be used as mind control. So there's there are lots of powerful things that can be done with these systems. But during the HAARP, or excuse me, the woodpecker system of the Soviet Union, the Soviets were able to produce what's called a scalar grid over the United States and control the weather within the United States. Again, unbeknownst to most Americans, they could move the jet stream and create long-term high-pressure weather blocks, floods and drought, etc. So this is not new technology, and I'm sure that during the 70s, top American scientists were probably cooperating with the Soviets and wanted them to do this. So it's kind of a strange relationship between these arch enemies of the Cold War. Of course, it's well known that during the 2008 Olympics in China, the Chinese government used over 1,000 cloud-seeding missiles and cannons to remove the threat of rain ahead of the Olympics. Our local ski areas here use cannons in the wintertime to increase the precipitation so they get more snow, you know, I mean, and of course this is an agricultural valley, so when you're dealing with a situation like that kind of weather modification, there are winners and losers, because given the finite amount of water vapor in the atmosphere, if you push it this way, it's coming from somewhere, and there's going to be a surplus someplace and a deficit elsewhere. So I would expect to see more lawsuits than we do see.
I was just going to say, you know, great, you go skiing for the afternoon, and then you get to the restaurant, and they've got no food because the farmer's crop has collapsed, you know. Well, we'll talk about HAARP. No, you mentioned HAARP earlier. This is the High Frequency Auroral Research Project in Alaska, and there's other arrays like this in other parts of the world, but as I understand it, this is the biggest and most significant. And some people will have heard of this because it's the subject of some conspiracy theory, simply because people don't really understand what it's for. And that's fair enough, because I don't think we've been told accurately what it's for. And when I looked at this thing initially, it was pictures I saw, and I thought, wow, what the hell is that? You know, it looks like a radio broadcasting station, but just on steroids. And then I read on the HAARP website what it was supposed to be doing. And I thought, you mean to tell me that you've done all this, you built all this and spent all this money for this measly little list, this little shopping list of activities you're telling me? It'd be like building the World Trade Center to store your gardening tools in. You know, it just doesn't add up.
Well, I think that the thing to realize is that, as you say, there's about 20 other, maybe more now, ionospheric heaters. Now, of course, the ionosphere is a layer in the atmosphere that's electrically charged with the positively and negatively charged atoms that are called ions, and these electromagnetic waves will bounce off the ionosphere, and of course that is the basis of our radio broadcasts and how we transmit them around the world. So you're right, this is a radio transmitter on steroids, but that can transmit billions and billions, even trillions of watts, and direct those to any location on the Earth. into the atmosphere. We can't see these waves, so, you know, of course that makes it harder for people to understand. But yeah, there's about 320 towers up there. It's using what we call Tesla technology, Nikola Tesla being the great genius inventor who died right around World War II, but was, you know, invented alternating current back in the late 1800s. He has my vote for perhaps one of the greatest scientists that ever walked the earth. Many inventions to his name, and he understood energy and wireless energy, you know, decades and decades before anybody else did. And so the patents that are used in HARP by a guy named Bernard Eastland directly borrow Tesla's ideas. So you're dealing with electromagnetic energy and what it can do. HARP is capable of generating electromagnetic pulses. For instance, it can also create a plume of very electrically charged particles, and then you zap it with the electromagnetic pulse, the EMP, and you can ignite this. And some people think that this is similar to Tesla's famous death ray. So, you know, we're talking enormous amounts of energy here, which can be used in, you know, strategic, peaceful war efforts. So HARP can certainly be an electromagnetic warfare weapon. And also, when we talk about scalar weapons and microwave weapons and radio frequencies, you know, we're just talking about different wavelengths of energy and how they interact. And the Earth itself is the big bar magnet with, you know, lines of electrical force that go through it. So it's a big electromagnetic generator. And then to interact with that now, we have all these human-generated surges of electromagnetic energy. And, you know, it's really quite remarkable that the military is so far ahead of the rest of us in understanding this. But that's the way it is.
You mentioned electromagnetic pulses, and this is something that people may have heard about in connection with solar activity, because every now and again, when the sun, you know, increase or decrease in sunspots or something seems to be happening, it's significant enough to make it into the mainstream news. Inevitably, the idea of solar activity affecting the Earth, that usually in a doom and gloom scenario, gets mentioned. Carrington event type eventualities involving solar outbursts and the devastating effect that an equivalent to the Carrington event, which was back in the late 19th century, I believe, something like that was to happen now as a result of solar activity, how devastating it would be for the Earth. I mean, I don't think HARP can do anything on that scale, but are you talking about the same basic effect of taking out electrical circuits?
Yes, absolutely. Another aspect of HARP is what they call Earth-penetrating tomography. And, of course, they sold it to Congress, the funding to Congress this way. Okay, now we can see into the Earth with these wavelengths and look at enemy bunkers where they have nuclear weapons. We can look at fine submarines under the ocean. We can do all kinds of things with this Earth-penetrating tomography. You're right. It doesn't compare with what the sun does, but it can certainly be used as a weapon of war, and it can be concentrated anywhere. Now, I would just submit, just because I'm retired and I don't have to worry about what I say, I would submit that if we want to find the cause of what brought the World Trade Center buildings down, we look in the same general area, directed energy weapons. Not saying that this is coming from HARP itself, but saying that it's using the same kinds of technology, scalar weapons, directed energy weapons, something that's very futuristic. I mean, when the atomic bomb was exploded back in 1944 over Japan, you know, this was a dramatic warning to the world. Look what we've got that you don't have. You know, it was an intimidation thing as much as anything, because the war was already over and Japan had already surrendered. But Dr. Judy Wood, who I've read and interviewed on this topic, who is the physicist I think perhaps most qualified to speak on what happened, She's a materials engineering professor, or was before she got fired. She thinks this was directed energy weapons, and she's got a book out now called What Brought the Towers Down. And, you know, people need to know about this stuff. I mean, as I say, military's way ahead of us technologically. What else can be done, you know, with this Tesla technology? But we're in that realm. And I would suggest that young, smart people, look into it.
Well, you mentioned Judy Wood, and her work seems to have attracted, you know, in the realms of 9/11 theories and conspiracy theories, just, you know, extreme vitriol that seemed, I mean, for some people it's just completely outlandish, but she seems to have attracted more criticism than people who say, oh, there were no planes, there were holograms, or something like that.
Yeah, I think it's because she's right. I mean, there's an enormous cover-up, of course. Obviously, it was not carried off by Osama bin Laden and 19 goat herders. Osama bin Laden was a CIA asset during the 80s, during the war in Afghanistan. His name was Tim Osman. And so, you know, we always, what's the phrase, the best enemies money can buy? You create your enemy, or at least the perception of an enemy, and then, you know, someone else does the dirty work. And in this case, it had to be, you know, the military powers of the world, which has to include the U.S. government. So this is a black op, a wet black op, because people were killed. And I think many black ops are carried out using these secret technologies. But I just threw that out because I think people need to be aware of this stuff.
Well, I was going to ask how, for example, the energy or the frequencies of something like HARP are actually directed to a location. And following on from that, then, you know, in terms of what you mentioned with the World Trade Center, I mean, how specific can you be? You know, how narrow can the target range be?
Well, the first question is a good one. They're both good questions. The first question, if we look at that Air Force document written in 1996 called Owning the Weather in 2025, they talk about a whole series of recommendations, one of which is to the creation of what they call ionospheric mirrors. Now, as I said, the ionosphere is made of electrically charged particles, but there is movement, turbulence in the ionosphere. So what the military has wanted to do is kind of create the facsimile of a flat surface of electrically charged particles. I gather they've, you know, learned how to do it. And that way they are able to direct these energy frequencies, wavelengths to much more accurately. With what we know of directed energy, about, you know, the kind of we, the citizens, these kinds of technologies can be delivered from the land, from the sea, from the air, and from space. What you would want to do, according to Judy Wood, is to interfere two different wavelengths targeted to the same area, in this case, the World Trade Center. Now, remember what I said about electromagnetic pulses, which might be the basis of what Tesla's death ray was, and how HARP could be involved in electromagnetic pulse by forming an electric plasma of highly charged atoms and then zapping it. Well, what happened, if you read Judy's book, you see, and she analyzed thousands and thousands of photographs of the World Trade Center, and there are many that I think are not doctored. And you see this kind of, the rising of this kind of gray, smoky-like stuff, which is very, very light. And I would just guess, I'm not a physicist, that this might have formed the function of the electric plasma. And then it was zapped by two interfering wavelengths. And in that area where the wavelengths interfere, you have a new physics created such that you actually have molecules exploding. You know, instead of attracting each other, now they're, you know, repelling each other. And so you had the dustification of the World Trade Centers. They came down virtually at the speed of gravity, but they came down along a wave front as if directed energy was being applied from the top down very evenly at the speed of gravity. So they come down in whatever, 6, 7, 8, 9 seconds. phenomenal, as if there's no resistance whatsoever by all of the underlying structure and the structure, underlying structure. This is the largest and most sturdily built, some of the largest and most robust skyscrapers in the world. By the way, built by the Rockefellers in the 70s, many speculate that they were built in such a way that this could happen. In other words, this was planned way ahead of time. And I believe that now. But what I was going to throw in there for extra, for bonus, because we are talking about weather warfare, it was Dr. Judy Wood's analysis of these thousands and thousands of photographs, some from space. She saw a hurricane. In fact, it was a Category 3 hurricane. It was a huge hurricane, Hurricane Erin, which was not reported on in the media, came within 90 miles of the coast of Manhattan, 90 miles. And she speculated at the time, and as I say, there was no coverage of this. All the news was on 911, the collapse of the buildings and killed people, and Osama did it, you know. But in fact, there are, lots of government reports that show this hurricane did exist. And if you look at the trajectory of this thing, it's very similar to what happened with Hurricane Sandy a couple of years ago now, which, of course, also slammed into New York and did a lot of damage. Well, this one went 90 miles within Manhattan and then veered off towards your neck of the woods, well, across the ocean. So, Judy Wood's speculation was that somehow or another, the energy from this hurricane was tapped to, like a great big huge Tesla coil, to fuel the destruction of the towers. I don't know about that. She knows more than I do about that for sure. And as I say, I've interviewed her and read her stuff. But to me, it seems like the power elite loves drills. They're very careful. And I'm guessing, wild-ass speculation out of the back of my pants, that Hurricane Erin was meant to be a drill for what later proved to be Hurricane Sandy. And I think Katrina was steered. You look at its course. So we have examples of the world's power elite. It's not against the Russians now. It's not against any country. It's against the civilian population of all countries, or against the countries that don't play ball with the world financial system, as I gather. You don't like that treaty? take this. Maybe you'll change your mind. This is the kind of blackmail that can be done with these kinds of technologies.
No, you're absolutely right. In many ways, there are no countries anymore. And actually, if you look back over history, even centuries or longer, for certain groups of people, they've been transnational. They've operated wherever it's been convenient for them to operate, to whatever ends, whatever agendas, and nationalities and international competition and conflict. They're just pawns on a chessboard, really.
Yeah. I mean, we know now that anybody who's looked into it, that the Rockefellers funded Hitler, and George Bush and his family were intimately involved in creation of the Nazi regime and the eugenics program, which actually comes out of Yale and the Cold Springs Harbor and Rockefeller grant money. So, yeah, this transnational elite that, has so much money and power, play the nations off against each other, and then their agenda is kind of advanced in the process of chaos and death for the rest of the population.
In terms of directed energy, talked about Tesla a little bit, and we have to remember that directed energy is not necessarily a bad thing. It's something that we all take advantage of in our daily lives. But
absolutely.
The story of his life was interesting. Without going into an enormous biography, he developed, as you say, well ahead of his time, these cutting-edge technologies, a lot of ideas that no one had thought of before. And then he was basically shut down. He had sponsorship, and then it was taken away from him. And then, as you say, other people co-opted his ideas. And I don't think, even if he did invent something that could amount to a death ray, he wouldn't have called it that. And I just think that he obviously wasn't someone who was going to play ball with the elite. Otherwise, he wouldn't have ended his life in the way that he did.
Well, you're right. Tesla's life is a fascinating story. I mean, here was a, you know, a giant of a genius. I mean, just phenomenal man. You know, I mean, you hear these stories. Well, you know, he's a, you know, from another solar system or something. You know? but basically, you know, he's coming from Serbia, and you know, his father was a minister and his mother was kind of an inventor, and he very quickly showed himself to be a genius by inventing alternating current, which replaced direct energy, which was being pushed by Thomas Edison. Now, you know, Tesla came over to this country when he was young because he realized that the United States was, you know, a good place for an inventor. And of course, he was able to show the radio waves bounce off the ionosphere back in 1924. He invented the radio, actually, and then gave the technology to Marconi, who was credited with it for a while, but then a lawsuit reversed that and said, no, Tesla discovered this. Marconi came over and hung out in Tesla's lab. So Tesla is this towering figure who was generating these incredible ideas, much greater ideas than Thomas Edison, who was the famous one. So Tesla needed to find a financial backer. And he found one in J.P. Morgan, who was, of course, perhaps the richest man in America, or had the reputation in World War I because he was doling out all this money to all these corporations and contractors. Turns out J.P. Morgan was an agent of the Rothschild family, and they really didn't have that much money, but he had a tremendous influence because of their backing. Well, J.P. Morgan wanted to control Tesla, and one famous exchange was J.P. Morgan saying, when Tesla wanted to build his Wardenclyffe tower in Manhattan, which was a gigantic Tesla coil that would generate wireless energy, and he had this vision of a peaceful, abundant energy that would, you know, remove poverty from the world. Tesla was an idealist. And this energy, which would be generated from this gigantic 100-foot-tall Tesla coil, would power airplanes and ships and cars and you name it. You know, you just tap into the energy. It's there in the air. And J.P. Morgan said, well, if the energy's free, where can I put a meter on it, you know? And he didn't like that system because he didn't like the idea of free energy. And so he pulled the funding on Tesla. Tesla went on to, you know, a bunch of more fantastic discoveries, like his death ray invention in 1940, which could melt down airplane or vaporize airplane engines at 200 miles, you know, by some remarkable process. And then he supposedly had a meeting with FDR during World War II, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, President of the United States, in which he was going to try to, you know, convince FDR to do this or that using his technologies for the military. And he died mysteriously. Although he was old, he was healthy. He died the night before that meeting, and the military and intelligence in the United States came in, seized most of his boxes of patents. Many of them wound up in Serbia. So Tesla is a hero and a tragic figure as well, because what he was doing was so revolutionary that the powers that be had to try to control that. Of course, Rockefeller was the oil monopolist. He didn't want the competition of Tesla's technology, for instance, which could have been used instead of the internal combustion gasoline engine. You know, there were lots of alternatives to that prototype, but they were taken out by the Rockefellers, who were so good at eliminating their competition. So we're looking at the interface between these corporate capitalists, probably with intelligence networks aiding them, and brilliant inventors who want to try to improve the world.
Well, I don't know what your take on this is, but speaking as a non-scientist, my senses tell me that when you look, for example, at the amount of energy the sun kicks out every day, you know, enough to power the world for a year, if we could find a way to do it, and energy being everywhere, or rather, I should say, everything being energy, and the manipulations of HARP are not facilitated through the genius of HARP. It's just that it's tapping into something that's already there. My sense is that if we wanted to move things, to heat things, to cool things down, to break them, to put them together, that the energy to do this is all around us. It's just that either we don't understand how to harness it or we've forgotten.
Yeah, well, in 1966, a guy named J. Gordon MacDonald, who was part of a panel of top scientists, I believe, with the Argus Group, wrote a paper called How to Wreck the Environment. And this went, of course, to the military. And the notion was that you have in nature a lot of very sensitive, turbulent systems, where if you know how the system works and you add just a little bit of energy here or take out a little bit of energy there, you've got an unstable system and you can create a cascade of changes, sometimes quite dramatic. And of course that coincides with the whole butterfly effect idea of chaos theory, which is, you know, a butterfly flaps its wings in Iowa and that sets out a cascade of responses, reactions in the atmosphere that results in a hurricane in the Bahamas, you know. But the idea of weaponizing the earth and the atmosphere and even human beings, of course, is very old. And, top scientists and military people have been working on this for a long time. You know, of course, a lot of this is black projects. So I think the militarization of space began during World War II, if not earlier. And, of course, after World War II, the United States smuggled in, oh, good 5,000 top Nazi rocket scientists, as well as mind scientists, mind control scientists like Joseph Mengele. Rocket scientists like Wernher von Braun headed up our NASA, which, of course, has been a very, very powerful part of our military ever since. So, the things I'm reading now, you know, would call the situation we have in the world today really the Fourth Reich. And, of course, you know, in terms of that kind of, the Third Reich wasn't destroyed, it just kind of changed venues, you know. That's an idea that I think has some legs when you start to look at what happened after World War II, and Operation Paperclip was the name of the clandestine intelligence operation that brought these top Nazi scientists to the United States. And of course, and including a guy named Richard Galen, who headed up our intelligence agencies in the Soviet Union, who was probably a double agent. And of course, Russia got their fair share too. Basically, the United States and Russia decided to split this tremendous resource, these brilliant German scientists, and you can have these guys and we'll take those guys. And then they smuggled them in the United States, CIA and other intelligence agencies smuggled them into South America and North America. And people like Klaus Barbie and Joseph Mengele. And, this is all coming out now. It was highly secret back then.
Oh, I don't pay too much attention to what's happening in the movies and TV, but I think there's been a recent biopic of Walt Disney. And I don't know if Wernher von Braun features in that as a character, but certainly he would make a good subject for a biographical film because, yeah, I mean, he was a genius on some levels. But he was also a guy for whom the border between fantasy and reality became very blurred at times in terms of his involvement with the space program.
Yeah, well, you know, I'd like to see that movie. I don't know that much about von Braun. My perception is he was handsome and maybe a little charismatic, and he kind of ascended to the upper echelons of NASA. I don't know whether he was one of the great geniuses of NASA or not, but yeah, he's just one of many that were imported into this country. And well, I'll leave it there.
Well, in terms of the militarization of space, just a little side point, because it got me thinking, there's a book I'm reading at the moment, and it's called One Small Step? And I can't remember right now the name of the author, but he's a German gentleman. And he mentions how a lot of the early NASA, I'm not sure if it was Voyager or some of the earlier shuttles, whatever it was they put up, I can't think of the name, probes, but they were launching under cover of the program which would lead up to the moon landing, they were doing all these various activities which were going to develop the technology needed to go to the moon. And he posits that it was possible that they were actually launching, you know, the early wave of spy satellites. But of course, that wasn't what was being put out for public consumption.
Yeah, in fact, Greg, I just got that book myself, and I've just been kind of dabbling in it. I'm in an interesting situation because when I was in high school back in Arlington, Virginia, my dad worked with the U.S. Geological Survey. And in 1965, he was transferred to Flagstaff, Arizona, to work with the astrogeology branch of the survey so that they could map the moon for the space landing efforts that happened in the late 60s and early 70s, all the Apollo missions. And my dad did map the moon, but you're right, this book and others maintains that it's a big question mark whether a man was put on the moon. It might have been a propaganda ploy to serve several objectives. And now I've done enough research on conspiracies, not conspiracy theories, but conspiracies, to take that very seriously. Amongst the, well, there's just a, you know, if you've dabbled in that book, you see so many reasons not to believe the official story. I won't go into them now, but the premise is that, I guess the biggest one is we couldn't do it now. Because of the radiation belts would fry the human beings on the way, and we, you know, and then you look at pictures of the lunar excursion module, you know, in the photos, it looks like it was put together by some high school class in an afternoon, you know, and supposedly this thing, you know, landed on the moon, and then it, you know, with rocket thrust, it left the moon and redocked with the, you know, orbiting rocket, etc. And which would be a tremendous feat, but actually, if you look at the pictures, there's no evidence that there was any jet propulsion, blast of air coming, or a blast of anything coming out of the. So the moon surface is completely unaffected underneath the LEM or the Lunar Excursion Module. So there's just a lot of reasons not to believe it. But and from what I understand, there would be lots of propaganda reasons to do it. The United States was involved in the Vietnam War at the time, and that was very unpopular. And as it shows in that book, the timing of these launches just happened to coincide with periods of the war that were particularly objectionable to the American people.
But on a practical level, if this tied in with you know, militarization of space, then this overlaps perfectly with what you've been talking about with regards to this whole program of control of the atmosphere and everything that can flow from that. So this kind of overlaps because, you know, you mentioned earlier on in the conversation the whole Star Wars initiative and all that, and that's not dead. It's just not in the public arena. It just doesn't have somebody like Ronald Reagan stumbling around trying to articulate it.
Absolutely. And I would add to those two, I would totally agree with what you say, and I would add to those the global warming scam, because we know from investigative researchers that during the Star Wars campaign of the 80s, the idea was to, you know, create this shield that would, you know, reflect or disable all incoming Soviet nuclear weapons. Well, that was the official story. And, of course, Ronald Reagan is about the mentality of a eighth grader, you know, and he was able to sell that because that's probably the average mentality in the country. But in fact, you know, half of the money that Congress threw at this, and it was billions of dollars, went into black budget projects that are impossible to trace. So probably both the moon landing and Star Wars, and I submit the global warming cover story, were in actuality. Much of that money is diverted to these black operations of militarization of space, geoengineering technologies, Tesla technologies. We're dealing with a secret military, a black military, as far as I can tell now. It's off the books, and you know, their projects are not publicized. In fact, they're covered up. So yes, I think that's a very good hypothesis that really all of this militarization of space began with Operation Paperclip and right after World War II with these top Nazi scientists like Wernher von Braun, you know, whose specialty was rockets. And and that it's a battle for control of space, and whoever controls space, that's the ultimate high ground. That's been the prize, I would say, since World War II.
You've touched upon the term mind control, and you also mentioned the effect of HAARP-type technologies on individuals. So perhaps it's worth saying something about this, because obviously you wouldn't necessarily use that to target one person. That might not even be possible. But you mentioned the Russian woodpecker frequency, and some people speculated that was about trying to affect the American population. Whether that was the case or not, there is the potential here, because you're affecting all aspects of the atmosphere and life on the surface of the planet, not just the weather system, but you're getting into frequencies. And you mentioned earlier the natural resonant frequency of the Earth itself. You can see the potential here for affecting human beings, whether globally or in certain areas of the planet.
Well, enormous field. And as I told you just before we started, Greg, last 2.5 years I've been working on another research project which very much overlaps with mind control. And short story is that, again, after World War II, the paperclip, Operation Paperclip, we brought in many, many top Nazi scientists who had worked in the concentration camps, like Joseph Mengele, Klaus Barbie, etc., many, many others, who were doing all kinds of draconian experiments. And the experiments kept going under the CIA's top secret MKUltra programs, and Bluebird and Artichoke and MKDeltra. MK is kind of a German for mind control, control with a K. It can be done individually, and of course the main purpose of these things is, to create Manchurian candidate type individuals who will then have amnesic barriers between different subpersonalities that were formed by trauma. So we're talking real criminal activity here. It's horrendous stuff, electroshock, drugs, sleep deprivation, you name it, torture. And then when an individual, especially a child under 6, is subjected to torture, the mind splits into subpersonalities or ego states, and these then can be programmed to have a new identity by skilled programmers. And Joseph Mengele was one of the most skilled, and he was a Nazi, and he came to this country and taught some of the top scientists here to continue that research. So now you have the potential, as you did back in the 50s, MK Ultra is mostly back in the 50s, we have the technology to mind control people like Lee Harvey Oswald and Jack Ruby, who were both, I think, involved, but not the shooters, not the real shooters in the Kennedy assassination of 1963. All that technology was available electronically with the RHIC, radio hypnotic intracerebral control. RHIC was developed before the Kennedy assassination of 1963, as was EDOM, EDOM, electronic dissolution of memory. And there's a book by a guy named Lawrence, came out just a year after the assassination. I think it's the best one, maybe two or three, maybe it's 1967. It's called Were We Controlled? And he makes a pretty darn good case that these technologies might have been used on Lee Harvey Oswald, who was the patsy, and Jack Ruby, who of course killed Lee Harvey Oswald, and then someone else was the assigned assassin. So, you know, if you figure that these kinds of electronic or psychotronic wavelengths can be used to hypnotize and control human beings, and that this was done back in the 50s and 60s and 70s, then you have potential now for all kinds of super soldiers, electronic super soldiers, mind-controlled zombies, really. They're slaves. Some of them have no souls, really. This is the most outrageous crime of all, to take away a human being's free will. But then the next aspect of this is, well, gosh, if they could do this to an individual, split the mind through trauma-based mind control, could they do it to a society? Well, that happened too in the Kennedy assassination, and that happened too in 9/11. I mean, they showed those images over and over and over again, and the society is now traumatized, and it's a psyop. And they know how, there's whole buildings full of psychologists and military people who plan these things, and they are in, you know, all parts of this country and your country and other countries. You know, is what they do. They're professional psyops people, and they're, you know, often contractors for the military. So anyway, I think 9-1-1 was a trauma-based psyop. I think the Kennedy assassination was a trauma-based psyop. I lived, you know, in both of them, and I remember the effect on the country for both of those operations, and I'll call them operations now. I mean, the whole idea of the lone nut shooter is preposterous, and the only way that they can get away with that is by just repeating the lie.
Well, we've talked several times today about the document Weather as a Force Multiplier, the 2025 document. To bring us up to date, because I know that your research and all the areas that you're interested in is always ongoing, how far on have we come since that document, do you think? I mean, there's been lots of new reports since then. In fact, there's been a massive increase in the frequency with which they've been published. But what's your sense for how far the technology might have progressed?
Well, let me just give you what's in that that 2025 document. They talk about what they want to do in the future, and they actually give a timeline for it. So amongst the things they want to do by 2000, they want to have these ionospheric mirrors in place with a sharp increase after 2008. Between 20 and 25, they want to use chemicals for atmospheric seeding by military aircraft and civilian aircraft. That would be the chemtrails program. By 2004, they want to create smart clouds through nanotechnology with a sharp increase after 2010. Now, nanotechnology, that's something else, you know, to think about. And then after 2005, they introduced carbon black dust, soot, into the atmosphere. They also want to accomplish this with five major areas to integrate weather modification capability, like advanced nonlinear modeling techniques. All that could be funded by global warming. Computational capacity, that could be funded by global warming money. Information gathering and transmission, that could be funded by global warming money. A global sensor array, and weather intervention techniques. Well, so your question, and of course all that stuff would be to use things like to enhance or reduce the amount of precipitation that an area receives, to degrade or improve lines of communication, visibility, etc., enhance storms, modify them to deny operations or modify battle space environment. And that kind of takes you back to what we've been talking about, control of space. Creating or removing fog to increase or reduce concealment. Okay, that's a very legitimate military concern. Changing space weather, the ionosphere, to disrupt or improve communications or destroy space assets. So, you know, you know, humans are very smart, and, you know, we're curious, and we keep pushing the envelope. I guess that is our nature. And, of course, we throw enormous sums of money at the military. So now to get to your question, where are we now as opposed to, I think we're on target. I think those things that they said they want to do, I think they're doing. And I think, like I say, Operation Hurricane Sandy and Hurricane Katrina, amongst others, probably were steered, maybe juiced up, and could give lots of examples. So I think we're in the arena of covert weather warfare. The media will comply with the powers that be, and they will basically write the stories that the intelligence agencies write for them. It's up to the people of the world to say, hey, you know, raise their hands and say, well, you know, we'd like to be part of this decision-making process, please. Please inform us. Please let us have a say in this. Now, in 2010, there were a number of joint papers written by the UK House of Commons and the US House of Representatives using the word geoengineering and how it's going to be controlled and moderated or you know, by governments, and it was going to be jointly done by England and the United or UK and the United States. So now the era where congressmen can just deny all this is happening, like happens in the movie What in the World Are They Spraying? I don't know if you've seen that movie, but the guy who makes the movie goes and interviews a number of congressmen, and every time he says geoengineering, they go, what? I can't hear you. I have to leave. you know, they're denying it. And that's even after 2010. So it's a reality. And I think people need to know.
Well, you mentioned black ops and budgets and funding. And also we've talked a little bit in passing about 9/11. And I've just been reminded that on September the 10th, 2001, was it Donald Rumsfeld who was making a statement about $50 bazillion from the Pentagon budget that couldn't be accounted for?
Yeah, I think it was $2 trillion, could not be accounted for, and you're right. Then the next day, September 11th happened, and that story was buried. Yes, I mean, there's obviously, again, these black military projects. You can put 9/11 under that, you know, and you can, there's a whole series of things you can put under that category. It's not supposed to be known about, you know. So almost that was just kind of a joke for Thomas Rumsfeld to do that.
Maybe that's what the money was for. Maybe he had to go to the Pentagon ATM and take out $2 billion for the next day.
Trillion. Yeah, you could say, okay, that 9/11 cost $2 trillion and the United States taxpayers paid for it. You know? That's possible in the world we live in. You know, I don't know exactly where that money went. But yeah, $2 trillion went missing. And that's not unusual, of course, because the Pentagon gets such an enormous percentage of the American budget.
Well, just in closing, Eric, I've just been reflecting on these subjects, and it sort of puts into a different focus a lot of what we see in disparate news sort of reporting these days, and can cause us to reflect on the increase in extreme weather events that we're seeing now, hurricanes, earthquakes. And I don't know if this could have anything to do with it at all, but there's been all these bizarre incidents with wildlife. You know, flocks of birds dropping out of the sky.
Yes, absolutely,
and
yes.
Disrupted migration patterns. And we know that a lot of animals are very, very tuned into, as we humans are, if we allow ourselves to be, into frequencies on the Earth. And I just wonder about this great big soup of events and how it could possibly be interconnected.
Yeah, there's all kinds of cases of what you're talking about, mass die-off of birds in BB, Arkansas, or whatever, or, you know, fish here, or whatever. Yes, these are the canaries in the coal mine that are being, I think, subjected to these harp wavelengths of energy and killed, you know, or harmed. And I think that's a very good point that, you know, I think if a researcher, you know, I've been working on this other project, but if a researcher, even one lone individual, decides to make this their, if they have the financial stability to devote their energy to this topic, you know, or one of another one, they can make an impact. You know, still one person, the sources, resources out there now on the internet are quite impressive, and the information's out there. You just got that same book I got on the moon landing thing.
Excellent. Well, we delved into so many different topics today, Eric, and you know, each one of them could have withstood 1 hour of discussion, but
yes.
Just as we draw things to a close, perhaps you'd like to share with listeners details of your website once again. I know you've mentioned it already, but that's packed with resources. And also tell us about your music. I don't know if you've done any recently, because, you know, all work and play makes Eric a dull boy.
That's right. Well, that is, we're on the same page there. I would say the two websites that I would recommend for this quote-unquote conspiracy stuff, naturalclimatechange.us. has the PowerPoint that I just mentioned, and lots of other information about the fact that nature is the main climate driver, particularly the sun and the variations in the Earth's orbit around the sun, and the Earth's ocean circulation, etc. And carbon dioxide's a bit player with almost no role. It's not a climate driver. And then the other website I would recommend is 911nwo.com. I've got a number of articles that I've written there, and I'm about to upgrade these things, but just reorganize them a little bit. But this is where I've got my paper on mind control, which is 80-page single-spaced, and I've done a couple papers since then on cults, where a lot of the mind control program is occurring now. And then to answer, you know, a nice question, yes, I've been very active musically since I retired. I've put out 4 CDs, and I got one just now called Paradise Divide. It's kind of a lot of bluegrass, banjo, guitar, some instrumentals, some vocals, And it's all of those, I think it's about 15 CDs I've put together that are available on my fun website, which is my name, ericcarlstrom.com. And you can listen to a couple of the tracks on my latest CD. Hope you like them. It's called Paradise Divide. But it's Eric Carlstrom, K-A-R-L-S-T-R-O-M.com. So you're right. I get a lot of pleasure out, especially the banjo these days, because it's such a fun instrument. But yeah, music is very important for me to stay mentally healthy.
Wonderful. Well, Eric, thank you so much for joining us once again on LegalizeFreedom.com.
Well, thank you, Greg. It's been a pleasure, and appreciate what you're doing, and hopefully follow up sometime.
Well, folks, that's it for another week. As ever, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoy the show, please check out the website. That's LegalizeFreedom.com, Legalize-Freedom.com, where you'll find an archive of programs offering alternative views on a wide range of topics, including world affairs, politics and economics, science and technology, religion and spirituality, conspiracy, and alternative history. You can also browse and buy a range of books and DVDs from our guests, and if you're feeling generous, make a donation to help keep the site up and running. Until next time, I'm Greg Moffat, and you've been listening to LegalizeFreedom.com.